Welcome to Medical Confessions,
your remedy for serious medicine. I'm Jen.
I'm April.
And I'm Scott. Thanks for tuning in. Today we're going to be talking about body myths. Things like, does sitting too close to the TV really hurt your eyes? Do women have Adam's apples? Does it take gum 7 years to digest? Exciting stuff.
All right. I'm excited about this episode because I like knowing stuff. And so I think a lot of these things I assumed were true. And so if they're not true, I want to know so I don't make a fool out of myself. So you guys don't seem silly
around the water cooler.
Right. Totally. But and then the couple that I ended up focusing on, I was like kind of pleasantly surprised. So do you want to hear my first
one? Yeah.
Okay. It is that you have five senses. The tagline kind of threw me a little bit because I'm like, well, of course you do, right?
The myth is that you have five senses.
Yes. And so sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell, which we all know is true. Mm-hmm. And then I would say that it's also probably true to say that not everybody has equal abilities in all of those senses. But for the most part, some people might lack, maybe somebody lacks sight. But they're saying that you actually have more than five senses, way more. In fact, scientists aren't even sure how many more. They estimate range of 22 to 33,
really?
Which I thought sounded a little bit over the top, but they're actually saying that they're considering the sense of balance, the sense of temperature, the sense of pain, and the sense of movement. And I won't bore you with my verbal interpretation of a nociception, the sense of smell or sense of pain. Let me finish, Scott, before you get all steady finally on me here. It says, while none of these additional senses include the ability to communicate with the dead, they're absolutely essential for life. And I think their joke about that was that people think of like ESP is another sense. And so they're not saying that they are these all-knowing, super fancy, crazy alien sensing things, but they're all different ways that we help maintain homeostasis with the body, protect ourselves, all that kind of stuff. So they...
Okay, list them off for me again, because there was a couple that I thought were kind of, yes, they already are those things.
Just the few that they list here is the sense of temperature, the sense of pain, sense of movement.
Well, so those two, temperature and pain, in my mind, that is touch, right? Like you touch something and you sense
so
that.
The so reason that I would... The difference? I would say pain is different.
So I don't know if that'd be different because like when we talked about like why capsaicin works, that vanilloid class of receptors that, you know, that gets temperature of 109 degrees will stimulate that receptor. It's just like when you touch something, it's stimulating like dendrites and axons and such. So it's kind of the same thing. Touch encompasses that.
Yeah.
So is that really its own sense or is that part of
touch? I'm going to use my own personal experience to counter what you're saying. We all know I don't like to be touched.
Can we say it's a subclass of touch?
Maybe. But let me make my argument first. So even getting a pedicure, incredibly ticklish. Like my feet, I go crazy. I hate it. I don't even like to really, like when people don't warn me and touch me, it kind of startles me, right? So therefore, I would be very sensitive to touch, we would assume. But then with like heat or temperature, I have all kinds of scars because I don't recognize that it's hot before it actually does damage to my body. Like it happens all the time. I'll reach in to grab something out of the oven and it'll take me a second before I realize that it's now like blistered my skin. That happens all the time to me. Like it's a joke in my family that I'm scarred up because I don't, and I like my shower super hot and all of that. So to me, my sense of pain or what have you is different than my sense of touch.
Well, I would guess I would disagree a little bit in that if you know, that pain from like, say, burning is that transient receptor protein vanilloid class. So you have less of those receptors and maybe your density of dendrites is more than this density of like receptor sites. But overall, it's still a class of touch in my mind. So maybe it's just a subclass of senses, so you can say maybe it's its own thing.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, a Ford F-150 is different than a Toyota Tacoma, but they're both trucks.
We just did the broken heart syndrome. You don't have to be touched to have that create pain.
Like correct.
The symptoms of a broken heart is because someone died and you're not being touched or
true,
anything.
That's just your sympathetic nervous system being discharged and the reactions to those neurotransmitters.
Scott just taking the fun out of everything. Well, one of the things that I was considering too, and this is more, I'm going to connect us with the animal kingdom or something, but have you ever had an event like a Mother Nature type of a thing, an earthquake or something like that, where the seconds right before it, you felt like something was off? So sense of movement, sense of balance, something like that. Animals have it, or I think they do, because I've had animals that have acted really strange right before an earthquake or something. But I've had those moments where something weird is about to happen. And
like a deja vu thing.
Kind of.
That's a fun one.
Right. And so what I'm saying is, I think there is something to this. I think there are a lot of other senses that we use. I was going to make a joke about you always having your phone on your lap and it vibrating. Like,
I like the sense of the phone vibrating in my lap. So stop it.
That sense of don't movement. Judge me. But just the sense of like temperature and balance makes sense to me because I feel like some people, we're going to do a future episode. We're going to do the one on kind of motion sickness.
Well, and I guess the balance one I kind of can see because it's not you actually physically touching something. It's the things in your ear kind of helping you balance. Yeah. So that's a little different type of sense, I would imagine. Maybe doesn't encompass in that touch and feel, you know, umbrella.
Yeah, so maybe you're saying this 22 to 33.
Maybe it's a little less.
Okay, so maybe there's a couple out there.
Either way. What I do know is when I say I have a sixth sense, that's kind of like the Down syndrome version of senses then. That's not enough. I guess Down syndrome would be too many.
Too many, an extra.
Yeah, so you're the Down syndrome.
That's right.
You've got too many senses.
That's right. But I just liked it. I thought that one was kind of interesting, and I'm always the one that likes the weird supernatural.
Well, I think it would be how you define a scent thing.
Well, and I think that's why there's so many, because they can't agree. On what classifies a sense.
True, like if the pheromones we talked about, right? What classifies a pheromone? Because just vomiting and someone being repulsed by that, is that then a pheromone? No, it's vomit and you just don't like the way it smells.
All right, what do you have, Scott?
That women don't have Adam's apples. The myth that women don't, and if you see a woman with an Adam's apple, you're like, oh, man. Gotta be a man.
And that's one I think I've always just assumed was true. You know, like
I did too.
Because you can't see them on women, right? It's smaller.
Not typically, yeah.
And there is, because that is such a thing, there's tons of women out there who they do have prominent. You two actually surprised me that you don't, because it's...
Because of our finger ratio.
Because of your finger ratio and your testosterone levels. Yeah. You know, we talked about higher testosterone levels, you know, increasing your finger ratio. But anyways...
We should actually get tested, like how much we have
testosterone.
I'm just curious because you just threw that out there like it was a fact.
Yeah.
Based on our fingers. I don't know. I don't know.
So what is
totally
the test for that? Like
it.
How do you test for that?
For testosterone?
Yeah.
You just go test for it like anything. Like you get a blood test.
Oh. Well, I have to go in to get my physical soon, so maybe I should request. Like, is it just a full...
Well, low T levels is kind of a thing for that aging men who, you know, they're less energy.
But would insurance cover it? Because I'm a woman. They're going to be like...
No,
low
you don't need
fine.
It. Yeah, you're good. You're supposed to have low T. Well, no. So what is classified as low T for you would be different for a man because there's levels, right?
Right.
There is actually women who don't like the fact that they have their Adam's apple prominent because somehow people have kept calling them a man. Then there's something called chondrolaryngeoplasty. Where you can just, it's tracheal shaving, basically. They go in there and they cut off that prominent laryngeal prominence.
But do they do that for women, or is that more something like a man who's transitioning to become a woman? Is that somebody?
So most of them are for that.
Okay.
But you can, if you are a woman and have it, you can get this done. The cost is about $3,000 to $6,500 is what I found online for the different docs who do it. The cheapest was $3,000. I don't know if you go with the cheapest, you know? It's like when you get a bid for plumbing, do you really go with the cheaper? I don't know.
Or is that person so proficient that they're just like
it's just assembly line style. Bring like, them in. Whack, whack.
I'm good. I'm quick.
But yeah, $6,500 was the most expensive I saw.
I just feel like that money could go to other places. I just feel like if that's your biggest concern.
Well, yeah, because like, and now I'm a guy, so it's different. But if I was a woman and had this laryngeal prominence out there, we should probably get into the specifics in a second. But if I was that person, I would be like any guy that came up and said you're kind of a man. I'd be like clearly more of a man than you because look at this guy right here, you know. And then I'd start tickling it in front of him and stuff.
Weird. I actually was going more of the route like I probably would do some augmentation or maybe a nose job before I'd worry about my Adam's apple, but whatever, Scott, that's fine.
Anyways, so what is that thing, right? It's your laryngeal prominence. So everybody has a larynx. It's your voice box. When you're young, men and women, your voice box is about the same. Everybody's size is going to be a little bit different, your vocal cord size anyway. And it's about 2 millimeters when you're a kids, and then puberty happens. Testosterone levels will affect the length and the girth of your vocal cords. Men tend to have higher testosterone levels, so their vocal cords tend to be longer and thicker, which is why they get the deeper voices. Men on average have 16 millimeters ish for their vocal cord length. Women have about 10 millimeters ish, and that's going to be an average. So, you know, it's about 50% greater for boys. Because of that, what you have on the front of your voice box is some thyroid cartilage, and that kind of helps protect thyroid and your voice box in general. There's a little shelf on the front of there called your laryngeal prominence, and that's what you're looking at with the Adam's apple. And because men's voice boxes are bigger, it pushes out that thyroid cartilage more, so you can see it better. And that's all that it is men's are bigger than women's.
There is a huge discrepancy in my homework and April's homework Scott's homework.
I was going to say, Scott does such a better job at educating our listeners.
Yeah. Well, you want to know, right? Like, what is that thing?
I'm like, I watched The Sixth Sense. I see dead people.
But women do have technically Adam's apples. You just can't see them. Exciting.
My myth is sitting too close to the TV is bad for your eyes. The most this will do is give you a headache from eye fatigue. They think that the rumor probably started when TVs were old and produced some x-rays.
I always thought it was like your parents were like, get out of the way. You make a better window than you do a door or whatever. And like, get away from the TV.
Me too.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
But no, apparently not. Most likely people are sitting too close to the TV because they already have poor vision.
So when came first kind of a thing.
Yeah.
One of those old school TVs with the pixels and you get closer and you couldn't really even see what you're saying. Because there's like, what, 2 pixels per inch or something on those things. It's ridiculous.
Right, and I just thought it was like the lazy kid. Like, you don't want to get too far because it was the old turn knob.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just easy to be right there so you can turn it for the five channels.
I remember when I first got a remote and I didn't have to get off the couch to turn it up and it was like magic.
Yeah.
So amazing. Because as the kid, you'd always be the one turning the TV.
Oh,
parents
sure.
aren't getting off the couch.
Right, you'd sit on the floor. True. So yeah, I always just assumed it was the same thing. Like, but I did think there might have been like a risk for cross-eyed or something. Like, I remember thinking if you're too close, maybe you'll...
Oh, yeah, because you're always zoomed in or whatever.
And then maybe what has perpetuated that rumor for me is as an adult sitting behind my computer screen, so like typing for a couple hours or working on something and reading it and then walking away and everything else is kind of like blurry or, you know.
Well, and they did say that is because you're so focused that the eye fatigue, you don't blink as much.
That's
when you're in front and you're just so focused on what you're reading in the screen and
Well,
whatnot.
Isn't there something with cell phones? Like, I remember seeing something about the light that it emits and it's like not good for sleeping. Is there any...
Well, so light in general, like what's causing that is light stimulates cortisol to be released in your body. So you get cortisol is a sympathetic nervous system thing. So that's your fight or flight. So if you've got that floating around, you're not going to be able to sleep as much. Darkness stimulates, what is that thing that everybody says?
Troponin.
Melatonin.
Not troponin. Tryptophan.
Tryptophan.
All right, that was sloppy.
Yeah. tryptophan actually turns into serotonin, which stimulates parasympathetic. But anyways, melatonin. So darkness will help secrete melatonin, which makes you sleepy. It's important for sleep-wake cycles.
Medical words are so...
dumb.
Well, no, like they're so... like melanin. Now I'm thinking about skin issues. You know, like I'm just like, they're so close and confusing.
Yes.
Well, and now cell phones are...
do the automatic light on and
off. Yeah, or the blue lights, right? Or is it blue? I don't know. Jess's phone has this light for nighttime when he's in bed.
Yeah,
and reading.
But he uses an Android device, and good for him.
It's true. I gave him my
rest
old
of
one.
Us. The rest of us iPhone users are just
we've
you know.
Gone to the Borg, and we've gone. Yeah,
but they're
one
thinking
of us.
About that
one
now.
Of us.
Yeah.
Well, and it is true because they do say like the more you watch TV at night, the bleeping habits are all out of whack, and you get sleeping issues. I think we talked about that on a previous episode.
Right.
I don't actually know if we posted or not yet, so try not to look for it because I don't think we did.
All right. So the next one I have, I love this one because it's like, you know how there's certain things when you're a child that you're like, oh, when I'm older, I'll be different. You know, like, so I remember as a child picturing myself as an adult. And I'm like, well, I won't do that anymore because as an adult. But then I grow up and I'm like, oh, I still do that. I'm still a creep like I was when I was 7. But the myth is swallowed chewing gum takes 7 years to digest.
When you said a creep like a kid, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
No, like, okay. Well, I just mean like little weird habits that you have and you're like, oh, I just do this because I'm a kid. And...
No, like eating Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Well, I still eat Play-Doh.
Exactly. Actually, sadly, April, that's exactly what I meant.
April's in the corner with paste and Play-Doh. Just.
But I think I actually started this as a kid almost like it's a symptom of my like rebellious nature. I would always swallow my chewing gum. Like even like the, Big League Chew.
Mm-hmm.
Like I refuse to spit it out because I'm like, I'm going to see what happens. Like, does it really take 7 years? And am I going to recognize this when I'm in junior high? But I always swallowed my chewing gum and I still do that. Everybody else I know will spit it out and I will just chew it until I'm done with it and then I swallow it. And I've never had any ill effects. And so I didn't believe that it happened. But reading it, it says that chewing gum actually has a synthetic rubber base that you can't digest. And so that's why it doesn't mean that it'll take 7 years, but basically your body doesn't digest it like other foods. So like if you go to April's house and her septic backs up, like it wants to busted. We're going to see corn and chewing gum. Anyway, there was...
No, I don't swallow gum.
You spit it out.
Oh, yeah. And every once in a while, I will because I hate people that litter. And yeah. I can't stand, like, if there's no garbage, I won't spit it out on the ground.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to swallow this. And it stresses me out. And it takes me a little while
just
to convince myself.
More often and you won't get stressed. Because I'm the same way. Like, I'm in my car and I hate, like, my kids and my husband will leave, you know, like, wrappers and stuff in the car. And I hate it. It drives me nuts. And so I'm just like, swallow it. It's nature's way of getting rid of stuff. She says that a gastroenterologist at Duke University is the one that kind of says that your human body can pass objects up the size of a quarter, which is funny to me. So no single piece of gum should be an issue. But if you were to swallow a whole bunch in a short amount of time, you could end up with a large that would be difficult to pass, which, you know, is probably a risk with a lot of other stuff as well.
Yeah,
I just thought that was interesting.
Well, and I remember being a kid, like, and I vividly remember being 10 years old and thinking, I'm going to remember being 10, swallow the gum and think, okay, when I'm 17, let's figure out if this is the same gum. But then I learned that's crap, so whatever. But
this no pun intended.
Well, and so I'm just sitting here thinking about my own habits, and about 50% of the time I'll swallow it, 50% of the time I'll spit it out, and the whole time there's this joke that's been emanating in the air that I've been laughing about. And you guys, I don't know if you picked up on it, but I've just learned April's a spitter, Jen's a swallower, and I'm a 50-50 kind of guy.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a reach. That
wasn't even a reach the whole time. I've been giggling over here.
And personally, I always joke with you guys that girls don't poop. And so now I'm like, oh, maybe that's why.
Well, I want to know what the limit is. Like, how much could you swallow before it becomes a problem? And we should test it.
Well, Dr. Little from Duke University, he doesn't say specifically how much it is. And I guess it would probably depend on the person. And depend on. But it once again, too, this actually just reiterated to me how impressive our bodies are. Because you think about, like, just this gum, like, you can't actually digest gum. So this gum you swallow and it rolls around and works its way through your digestion. It amazes me after seeing the innards of an animal that April and I saw last summer. Like, how does stuff not get kinked up in there more often? And how do things pass so well through your second brain?
Well, and it is your butt brain, right? But yeah, so, you know, you've got that peristalsis just moving stuff through and your body is just filled with tons of different types of bacteria that help break it down and you just don't have bacteria to break that down.
Yeah.
And speaking of bacteria to break stuff down, why don't we talk about some gum that you could buy? We all know that there's a bunch of bacteria in your GI tract that helps you digest stuff. There is a type of gum out there that is a probiotic, giving you that good bacteria that'll help you digest things. So if you are a gum swallower, this stuff is called chewable oral probiotics. It's a dentist-formulated gum that is infused with probiotics. It helps with bad breath, it helps with cavities, and help you digest stuff. So if you do want to buy some of this gum, go ahead and go to our website, medicalconfessions.com, click on our store, and it will take you straight to Amazon where you can purchase some of this fantastic gum. Now that we've learned about some gum that might be beneficial to you, people out there say cracking your knuckles might not be good for you. So have you guys heard this myth that cracking your knuckles is going to cause arthritis?
Yeah, like I see older people with the crippled up arthritic hands and I'm always like, oh, they cracked their knuckles, broke everything.
So I'll just tell you, it doesn't. That's not a thing.
Well, what are you doing when you're cracking your knuckles then? It just seems unhealthy.
Doesn't it? There are actually 100 types of arthritis out there. The ones you were talking about was rheumatoid arthritis. So what you're doing with cracking knuckles is you've got three bones in each one of your fingers. They're phalanges. Each bone is just named by a placement there. So you've got your proximal phalange, medial phalange, distal phalange. And then each knuckle has a synovial sac around it that's got some fluid in there called synovial fluid. And that helps lubricate the joint and that sort of thing. Inside that synovial fluid is oxygen, carbon dioxide, nitrogen, these sorts of things. And when you stretch out that synovial sac, you increase the pressure inside that fluid. And the joint itself then will have decreased pressure. That gas will then turn into a bubble and come out of the sac as a popping sound. So it's just the popping of gas inside your knuckle. So that's what's happening with cracking your knuckles, right? It's just gas bubbles popping. So is that bad for you? Well, of all the types of arthritis, it can be caused by tons of different things. Did you guys know there's a sexually transmitted cause for arthritis?
Oh, it's, no. It's, is this like high risk in nursing homes? Like, we talked about them being like the most active STD group. Like,
maybe.
Do they also now, are they getting...
Because funny story, like, forget what it is, like 50% of people over 65 have arthritis. Maybe. you know? So gonococcal arthritis is the name of that one. Mm-hmm. There's a type of bacterial arthritis called non-gonococcal. And then the one that...
I'm just picturing, like, Scott with, like, a dictionary or, like, an encyclopedia open, like, as a kid and, like, giggling. You know, like we did with Mad Magazine. Scott's over here, like, gonococcal.
Have you seen that movie Bad Words with oh my god, that is the funniest movie you'll ever see. It's got Jason Bateman in it,
and I do love him.
Is an adult that finds a loophole in the rules and enters a kid's spelling bee contest. And it is absolutely hilarious. Either way, there's this Indian kid in there that's like, what's your favorite word? And he's like, stop talking or I'm gonna tell the pilot you've, you know, got a bomb in your bag or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Something anyway, totally racist and inappropriate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And he goes, mine's subjugate. And then he gets this like super orgasmic look on his face. Ah, subjugate, terrible. That's what I thought of when you just said gonococcal.
You identified with them, though, didn't you?
Say gonococcal. No, so there's an autoimmune type of arthritis called rheumatoid arthritis, and that's the one that's making all of your deformed joints and such. The one that most people used to think was these cracking your knuckles is osteoarthritis, and that is basically, it's kind of a normal aging process, but if you get extreme wear and tear on your joints, you can get this osteoarthritis, and so does that cracking of the knuckles and the popping of all that gas cause the excessive wear and tear on the joint to cause arthritis? And the answer is no. There's been tons of studies that say it doesn't. My favorite one comes from Dr. Donald Unger, who decided to prove this back in the day, and he cracked the knuckles on his left hand twice a day for 60 years and didn't crack the knuckles on his right hand for 60 years. And after 60 years, his quote was, there is not the slightest sign of arthritis in either hand. That was my favorite study on the subject. It was one guy, but
that's like incredible. Super dedication,
isn't
like,
it?
That's better than most marriages.
Well, and my favorite part was, you guys have heard of the Ig Nobel Prize, so it's
mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the Nobel Prize that given to like research that does this really even matter? This weird, strange research. Like actual Nobel laureates give these people the prize. He won an Ig Nobel Prize for his research on cracking his knuckles for 60 years. But if you ever want to look up some funny studies, Ig Nobel Prize, look it up. There's some funny things people get for that.
What is the one that makes your knuckles like footballs, like little mini footballs?
That's the rheumatoid arthritis.
It is.
Yeah,
okay.
It's an autoimmune problem.
My great grandma had a lady over at her house when I was young, and her hands, I've never seen any hands like it since. They were so awful, and they told me, see that, April? Don't crack your knuckles because that will happen. And I didn't for a long time.
Yeah.
Did you look at it and go, it's rheumatoid arthritis? It's your body attacking itself.
No, I was like 5.
Yeah. Or 6. But I think parents do that. All the time. Like they tell their kids like a little lie.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know that it's bad behavior. I don't mind it when other people crack their knuckles, but for me, like it doesn't hurt, but it's probably like my 20th sense, that sense of like feeling.
Your Down syndrome sense?
The one that just like, I don't like the sensation of the cracking. Like it doesn't make me feel good. But I like watch, like my husband will like crack his back, crack his neck, you know, like do weird things. And yeah, it doesn't.
Well, some of those cracks are coming from something else other than the gases, but the ones in your fingers are from the gases.
Okay. So if you crack your back, it's not the gases?
It depends on the cause. Those people who crack their knuckles and then immediately can do it again, you do actually have to have the gas build up again before you can crack it again. And those people impress me because how much gas is going straight in that synovial fluid that they can just sit there, crack it like it's nobody's business. Creepy.
All right. So you can crack away, huh?
Crack away and it won't cause arthritis. But unfortunately, all the studies do say you will get decreased grip strength.
Our last myth is urinating on a jellyfish sting will soothe the pain. This is not true.
Have you ever peed on yourself on a jellyfish sting?
Well, and like, yeah, and like, was it just desperation? Like they didn't have any other water? What would cause somebody to do that?
That's a good question. I remember that Friends episode.
Like, was it a man or was it like...
Women can't...
Yeah.
You remember the Friends episode, right? Where Monica gets stung and they're like, she couldn't bend that way to pee on herself. So she has to have Joey or Chandler pee on her. And then Chandler ends up being the one because Joey had the fright.
I don't remember that episode.
I remember it well. It was hilarious. I loved Friends.
This saying, the patient should remove any visible tentacles using a glove, preferably. The best thing is to use household vinegar. I mean, I don't know how many people bring that to the beach with them.
Yeah,
but...
that would be my argument against that. Like, what do you have readily available?
I actually disagree with that one because we did do this episode on our why vitamins turn your pee yellow and why asparagus makes your pee stink. Oh, we talked about this a little bit in the specific. So it depends on the type of jellyfish. So if it's like a base is the molecule fuel that causes the stinging, then sure, vinegar will neutralize it, but do you know what type of jellyfish it is? So the best way to go would be to use the salt water that it's in to help dilute the sting.
Well, thank you for describing what I was just going to describe, Scott.
Thunder Stealer. Well, and I'm going to jump in and argue now. It too. I wonder if they're saying that because most of them would be affected from vinegar.
Could be.
Yeah, it's just saying the acidic acid from the vinegar can block the discharge of the remaining stinging cells. If vinegar's not available, the next best thing is the salt water to rinse off the rest of the cells. It was tested in laboratories that urine, ammonia, and alcohol can cause active stinging cells to fire, which means applying pee, alcohol, or any of those will make it worse.
It's unfortunate.
I want to know how many people have tried. If you're a listener.
Yes. And if you peed on somebody, how did it work?
Or if you pee on someone after this episode as a joke and convince them to let you do it, go ahead and comment.
That would be awesome. Because I love it when you get to like use a lot of big words and make people do stupid stuff and they believe you. It's fantastic.
How many times have you done that, Scott?
I have one example. I think I've told you guys when I won't mention his name because we come across him on a daily basis, but I convinced him coffee makes your penis shrink over time.
I don't think you've ever told me that.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
So we were in the break room there and he was drinking a ton of coffee and I don't know what he said, but it was kind of annoying. And I remember I was like, so you do know that coffee makes your penis shrink, right? And he was like,
"No,
it doesn't."
That?
No, because, well, so this is why the story gets great. So I just threw a bunch of words together. None of this is true. So nobody listening actually believed this. This is not true. But I said, well, you know, the caffeine, you know, is kind of theophylline based. And theophylline over time will decreases the elasticity in the tunica in your penis. So the less like you remember that.
Yeah, if you would just throw a little bit out there and I would be like, oh, I remember those words. That's true. Yeah. That's so true.
Well, and so what I told him was it decreases the elasticity. So over time, every erection gets smaller. So the more coffee you drink, the smaller your erections will be over time. He completely stopped drinking coffee for like 2 weeks. And like he was telling everyone it does. And finally, he mentioned it to this nurse and she looked at him and goes, no, it doesn't. Who told you that? He looked right at me and I was like, eh. And he was like, you're a jerk.
Wow.
That is probably lost sleep over it. And if you defined it as not necessarily flaccid, but erection length.
Yeah.
That actually kind of even clarifies it more. You know,
oh, yeah. Solidified. I got specific. You throw some big words out there and make it.
Yeah. Because I would buy
hook,
that.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Like, well, and you told him that because you were annoyed by something he said. So this is Scott's passive aggressive way.
Like, smart guy's revenge.
Get back.
It's pretty brilliant. I like it.
Actually, we get along great now, so it's awesome.
That's good. That's good. Well, you test a man within the length of his penis, things change in your relationship, apparently. Well, if you like what you saw or heard today, check us out on YouTube or our podcast.
Or visit our website, medicalconfessions.com.